We begin, and we have two papers before lunch. The first paper is by Martin Gettelmann. He's from the Free University and in Berlin, Freie Universität. He will talk about ritual and Confucian academies in the context of Korea, and in particular the role of Li Ji there. Thank you.
Should I wait a bit? Is there people coming in, or just
Stefan?
Yeah.
Stefan,
okay. Maybe I can use the time.
To just do.
To do my preliminaries, some disclaimers. First, I want to thank the organizers for inviting me and giving me this great opportunity to be here and to learn so much already in these 1.5 days. I would like to say a little bit about my own research, which this comes out of. I'm mostly concerned in my own research with the transfer of the concept of Confucian academies from China to Korea. So in a sense, the institution in itself, how it came from China and Korea and was perceived in Korea especially, and then the transfer of knowledge in itself in the institution. So we talk about Confucian academies as an institution of education. In generalizing Confucian academies, usually three points are made, and these all fall, in a sense, under education, which are study and lectures, and these are all, of course, connected to each other. Then the book collection and book production, and the third point is the sacrificial rites held in the academies. Now, looking at the use of the Li Ji in the Confucian academies of Korea, to give myself a frame, I just started to look at these three points and look how we actually can find the Li Ji in these three functions, so to say, of Confucian academies. And it's natural, of course, to start with the question of the existence of the books, actually. So I would first look at the book collections and productions. And as I come from the Chinese background as well, it just makes sense to look at the model academies, so to say, for many Chinese academies and also for most of the Korean academies, which is the Baludong Shuyuan, which of course is the academy that was revived by Zhuxi in 1180. And this is just a short list of the books he requested from the court for his newly revived academy. And you can see that the Li Ji is somewhat among them, but not really, because it is only in as he requested the Daxue and the Zhongyang. But of course, later on in the educational course of the academy in itself, there were also copies of the Li Ji present and used in the Waidio Grotto Academy itself. Then I have an example of another academy that is in China, which is Hongdao Academy, which in its study regulation set up a compulsory curriculum. Hongdao Academy is a good example. Now we're in the Ming Dynasty now, this is 14th century study regulations. Hongdao Academy is a good example because it can be counted as a kind of examination grinding school. This is an academy that is not so much concerned with higher learning in a sense of self-cultivation. Of course, it is too, but it is mostly perceived as an examination preparation school. So it kind of mirrors the texts you need to do well in the examinations. And the civil service examinations, of course. And you can see, of course, the Li Ji is here among the classics. And then there is a kind of elective, that's how I chose to translate it here, compulsory and elective curriculum of the academy. And you can see we have, like, they have an own field on ritual studies, which includes the Jali, of course, and the Ili and the Joli here. The list goes on, I just cut it off because there's much more books. In total, the Academy had to provide, if it follows the study rules, more than 30 books to its students, which amounts to a lot. I don't know if an Academy actually could hold all these books. Now, looking at the Korean case, the first Korean Academy, which we'll talk a little bit more later about, is Taepaek Undong Soan, or the Bayundong Shuyan, which was founded in 1549. You can already see the closeness in name to the White Deer Grotto Academy. And this is its book list. The Academy was founded in 1543, excuse me, and was royally chartered in 1550. And this is its book list. And you can see we have the Jolie and we have the Liji as well here among the books, among a large amount of books, I would say again. And then another academy on the Korean peninsula. This is just one page out of the records of the academy books of the Oksan Academy. These pictures of Oksan Academy are all by Lee Byung-hun, so I have to thank him here at this point for providing them to me. And you can see, right, the first book that is present here is the Liji, among other books. What is interesting about this is, you can see this is a kind of index, so they were checking if all the books are actually present and what amount they were present. And on the on this side, you can see there are actually, can I go on this side? No, I can. We have on-hair versions. I think it's pronounced yanjie in Chinese, which are the vernacular versions of certain books. Yeah, we have the Zhouyi, the Shujing, the Shijing, the Luni, the Mengzi, the Daxue, and the Zhongyong. We have in vernacular versions, which means they're in written Korean. It's difficult. I'm no expert on this matter of these vernacular versions. Usually they were produced, of course, and one of the mostly produced books in these vernacular versions is the Xiaoxue, is to, of course, to spread the message of these books among all people that even couldn't read the Chinese characters. But how they were used actually in the educational sense of the academy is, I can't really say, but it's interesting to see, I think, that the Liji is not among these books that where we can find vernacular versions of. And even if I look further, of course, my search is rather preliminary, we cannot find, I at least couldn't find a version of the Liji in a vernacular sense. Now, this is just the case of this... of this Oksan Academy, which the royally stocked books were sent to the Academy, which included a version of the Liji in this. So you can see this is, of course, the five classics in which they were delivered this. Now, coming to the study and the lectures of the academies, if we look at their study regulations, we usually have a curriculum set up that starts with the four books, continues with the five classics, and often here by one of the most famous Korean scholars, Yi Huang, mentioned, of course, the Xiaoxue and the Jiali as kind of a gateway to these books. So it's not really clear if these are to study beforehand or afterwards. Sometimes it's very different in many cases. And this is mirrored by the other most famous Korean scholar, which is Yi, who also suggests the four books and the classics as, of course, the beginning of every study. And then says we can read some other books later. And you see that here's the Jinzilu, so this follows mostly a Juxi-centered educational curriculum. And of course, also the inclusion of the historical books only after the classics, as a kind of giving individual examples of good or bad behavior, but not teaching a sense of essential Confucian values in this case. Okay, now more concretely, I jump ahead a little bit to Yun Pong-gu, and his lectures. This is an actual lecture plan he set up for his academy, the Nogang Hungso one, or the academy he taught in. And we see he starts out with the elementary learning, the Xiaoxue, then the Daxue, the Luni, the four books here, and includes the Liji as well as the family, as well as the Jiali. In his lecture regulations, it's interesting to notice, at least I found that it was very interesting, that the sequence here is we start with the Xiaoxue and then move on to the four books and then move on to the five classics. But before we study the five classics, which includes, of course, the Liji, we can also move to the Jiali, the Zhendexu Xinjing, of course, the Jinzilu, or other books, including Songhe Xipto, which is a book by Yulguk. Now it becomes a little bit more concretely talking about the Liji, and this mirrors, of course, what we heard yesterday about Zhu Xi's attitude towards the Liji and Yili. And we can find this quite often among Korean Confucianists or Confucian scholars, that they not only say that the Yili was a classic and the Liji was the explanation to it, but that they actually dismiss the Liji in a sense as being a jumbled mess constructed during the Han Dynasty. And of course, the important parts are already picked out and the rest is doubtful, to say at least. Interestingly, I found also a part on the Liyun where it gets picked apart and said, like, yeah, of course, this could never have been by Confucius, and the size in there as well. And again, saying, okay, this is with the burning of the books, this must have been all became a mess, and then they put it together, but it is more like the explanation to the Yili, which contains the real information on ritual. Now, coming to the third point, which is of course the most, detailed one I can talk about, is the sacrificial rites of the academies, which of course directly relate to the uses of the ritual books. Now, I'm going back here again to the Chinese case, to the White Deer Grotto Academy in China, and this is a picture of its Confucian shrine, of course, today. You see, this is one of the most famous depiction of Confucius we can find quite often today, which was produced in the Ming-Qing, I think. Of course, during Zhu Xi's times, we didn't didn't have a picture or a statue of Confucius, but rather chose, as we will later see, to have the representation as just the wooden, the Shenwei tablet, spirit tablet. Yes, exactly. So the rites used in the White Deer Grotto Academy, of course, over time changed. That's the biggest problem if we talk about these academies, that we talk about one academy, but it's one institution over time. Of course, the rites are often changing, and often in the records of these academies, which are the most, where we get most of our information about these academies about, often we find, in this and this period, the rites were corrected because they weren't correct before. But most constantly in the White Deer Grotto Academy, we can find the rites of the Shizai and Shidian. I think it's the Chinese pronunciation of both. Very clearly with constructions of saying that during one, the sacrifices are three rabbits, and during the other one is one pig. And of course, this changes a lot too over time. But this is usually what is said to be used. This is interesting, of course, as these are, of course, the rites that are used in the Confucian shrines, yeah, and in the local schools, which are, and this is important to say, I think at this point, which are the state schools, and these academies are in a sense private. We often speak of them as private academies, even though they have to be described as more semi-private. I will talk about this a little bit more later. Now, looking at the Korean case and the foundation of the first academy in Korea, and not only did they did Choo Se-bung, who founded this first academy in Korea, quite directly mentions the White Deer Grotto Academy as an ideal, but he also talks about that the important part about the academy was setting up the shrine. So the shrine is the most important part for him about the academy, and cultivation begins for him with the veneration of worthies. So the shrine is kind of the heart for him of the academy. And as we will see, it can transform a whole region. That's, I think, is a very important part in this. This is a song sang in honor of the worthy venerated in this academy, which is An Yang, usually credited with bringing Zhu Xi's teachings to Korea in the 14th century or in the 13th to 14th century. So what we see here, especially in the second part, is equalizing the landscape of the academy in Korea with the academy in China. So we see Mount Sobek is the mountain right next to the White Cloud Grotto Academy in Korea, and Mount Lushan, of course, is the mountain right next to the White Deer Grotto Academy in China, and then Chukke is the little river there, and Lian, of course, is the little river. Shouldn't call it river, the little stream next to the White Deer Grotto Academy. So what happens here, I think, and is very interesting, is Linda Walton has already, like in her book on Sovereign Song Academies, talked about that these shrines were meant to create a sacred geographies, I think is the word she uses. And what we see here is that the Koreans, of course, they got all this information about the Chinese academies as well and took them in and then tried to put this in their own place, create like a sense of these sacred geographies in Korea. And I think this is a very important to understand the use of these rituals. I will skip this over. These are just the academy regulations of the first Korean academy, and is mostly focused on its sacrifices as well, as you can see. And then this is very important. I jump ahead a little bit again, but is a memorial written in 1797, decrying the evils of the Confucian academies, and saying basically the important point in this is that as they had no ritual practice before for these academies, they just took over the ritual practice that was reserved for the state shrines. So what happened with the academies is that they basically took the rites that were reserved for Confucius and employed them for their own private veneration of worthies. The worthies that were venerated in Confucian academies often were also later included in the Munmyo, in the Confucian shrine, but also often were just local scholars or local teachers that were venerated by their own disciples later on, but had no greater role. But still, they used the same rites to venerate them. And this is decried here, also using the Liji as saying, "Oh, of course, they always go beyond what is actually." Decried as the sacrificial, the sacrificing of animals for the rites and stuff. These are some examples of Oksang Academy. You can see the spirit tablet. They still do these rites today, of course. And you see that the pig there is just an example of these, how they do it. And they have very detailed They have very detailed prescription how to do these rites. What is very, I just want to mention this real quick, what is very interesting here in this is that we also, the documentation of these rites and who attends them and who comes and who's there is also very important for these academies. I can jump off for this. As a conclusion, or as a preliminary conclusion, I would say what is interesting to see looking at Confucian academies in Korea is an interesting, to use the word ambiguity again here, in the use of the lisi. On the one hand, it is there and it is selectively used very strongly. We have these nine deportments, for example, how to behave during the rituals, which come directly from the Liji, and they're hung in the academy, you can see them. But on the other hand, the Liji in itself is understood, as I tried to show, as a very problematic work. And then what also enters into context, as we have an educational institution here, it is also within the gravity of the civil service examinations. And the civil service examinations require the need of being fluent in the Liji, or at least knowing the Liji. So, of course, they always have to fall back on this as well. Maybe this is...
We leave it for there.
Yes,
for now.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.